You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we head to Texas to continue our series in getting to know the Council of Presidents.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul at csp.edu.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Scott Murray. He's third vice president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, representing the West Southwest region of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Dr. Murray, welcome back to The Coffee Hour.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Andy and Sarah.
We are excited to get to know you more today and share that with our listeners as well. So we start off in this series with the lightning round rapid fire questions about your favorite things. Are you ready to play?
Let's go.
All right. First question. Favorite color?
Blue.
Ah.
Because my wife has glorious, sparkling blue-gray eyes.
Oh, my goodness. That is the sweetest thing I've heard.
It'll get me points later.
Favorite cuisine?
Anything. I mean, I will eat absolutely anything. Of course, I love the barbecue, the Texas barbecue our men made at Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas, where I was pastor for 28 years. They had the best ribs going. Mm.
All right. Favorite book, and we know that you love the Bible. We know you love the Lutheran Confession. So you can add to that list. Favorite book?
Yeah, I mean, the Trilogy of the Rings by Tolkien, which I read a couple of times out loud to my children when they were, you know, 8 or 10, something like that. And so I've read through the thing about 4 times, and it never gets old.
Wow, that is impressive. 4 times. All right. Favorite office supply? It's very important.
Chair. Comfortable chair. Right?
That's a new one. I like it.
Yeah, that's important.
That's very important.
I hadn't thought about that. That is quite key. Think where we'd all be standing or sitting on the floor.
We're all sitting on chairs right now.
Yeah.
A favorite dessert?
Black Forest tort.
Ooh.
Made by my mother. I have to put that in. She made homemade Black Forest tort that was to die for.
We might need a recipe.
My wife has the recipe.
That's for an upcoming episode. Favorite vacation destination?
Well, we just came back from Cancun and enjoyed our time in Mexico. So that's right, front and center right now.
Okay.
Right. This is like asking your favorite child, which is so wrong. Favorite hymn?
Lord, Thee I Love with All My Heart by Martin Schalling.
That is an excellent choice.
Yeah.
I highly approve. Yeah.
Of course, it's sung at many funerals, and I expect it to be sung at mine. So I have trouble getting through it oftentimes, you know. You get kind of weepy as it goes. Because I've sung it, for example, at a memorial service for Robert David Preuss way back in the 90s. I think almost every memorial service at the seminary had that as a hymn, and wow.
It is an excellent one. All right, last one. Favorite time of day?
First thing in the morning when I get my cappuccino, sit down and break open my laptop and start working through my devotional reading.
Mm-hmm. Cappuccino.
Mm-hmm. I knew I was in high cotton the year my wife bought me a cappuccino maker for Christmas. It is wonderful.
That is fantastic.
So where did you grow up, Dr. Murray?
Near Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I was born and raised near Kitchener, which is sort of the Lutheran Mecca of Canada. Even today, the population of Kitchener, the largest minority there is German. It has the world's second largest Oktoberfest, and it actually occurs in October, unlike the Oktoberfest in Munich. Great hockey town, played hockey till I was 16, still have all my teeth.
That is a fact we needed to know, actually.
Yeah. I had a wonderful, idyllic childhood, well cared for by family. We were not well off. We were poor people, but I didn't know we were poor. I was so well taken care of by sacrificial parents that I hadn't any idea about the level of poverty we were living in.
So tell us about that journey as you grew up. What eventually led you to the seminary?
Oh boy, this is a bad question because it's hard to answer.
Mm.
And I can only answer it sort of with a back story. Okay. So I was in the ministry for 5 years when my parents came to visit my wife and I in New Orleans where I was serving. Mm-hmm. And one day, my mother says to me very seriously, "We have to sit down together at the kitchen table. There's something you need to know that I've never told anybody." And of course, immediately I'm thinking, what could this possibly be? And I look exactly like my dad, so that wasn't the issue, you know, right? But so she sits us down and solemnly says, "You know that you had an older brother who died at 10 days after birth without benefit of baptism." I said, "Yes." "And you know how bad that was for your father?" And I, "Yes." "Well, when I became pregnant with you 3 years later, I was afraid for the first 3 months of my pregnancy that I would lose you as well. So what did she do? She got down on her knees and prayed and said, 'Dear Lord, if you'll give him to us for 18 years, he's yours for the rest of the time.' And who did she tell after making that prayer? Absolutely no one. Not me, not my father, not her pastor, not her mother, no one. And I can't remember wanting to be anything but a pastor. I can think about being 4 or 5 maybe and standing on the pew and looking, you know, toward the front of the building and wanting to be that guy in the pulpit." So, I mean, she pulled a Hannah on me and, you know, she said, my mother is so pious, she's still alive. And she just said, "You know, I'm sorry, I may have committed you to something you wouldn't have chosen yourself." And I just said, "Mother, I can't imagine being anything else. And I'm delighted to have served the Lord as a pastor in those days for 5 years and now retired." So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
What was your favorite class in seminary as part of your formation?
Anything that Robert David Preuss taught. So I managed to arrange to have both confessions courses with Dr. Preuss. And then after that, anybody that could read Latin would go to him at the beginning of any quarter and say, "We want to read Gerhard or Kalov or Quenchsted." And he would never say no because he loved those 17th century theologians. And so almost every quarter I had a course with Dr. Preuss, even though he was the president of the seminary. Mm-hmm. So it was absolutely Dr. Preuss's classes.
What is it about the way that he taught, the way that he approached pastoral formation that made you love his classes so much?
Oh, well, a couple of things. Number one, he himself had been a pastor in some very difficult circumstances, mm-hmm. especially early in his ministry. Secondly, he was still a student. He was, of course, one of the most learned theologians of the 20th century, but he still learned together with you. He wasn't a sage on the stage. He was a delightful mentor. There was no doubt that he knew more than anybody else in the room, no question. But you never felt sort of cornered by him in that way. And in fact, there were times where he and I disagreed, and he would come back later and say, "You know, you were right," which, I mean, that was flabbergasting to have someone like Robert Preuss say that.
You mentioned earlier Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston. Tell us about the congregations you had the privilege of serving.
Right. I served 3. Straight out of the seminary, I was assigned to as the first pastor to a mission in Cobourg, Ontario, which is a town on Lake Ontario, about 60 miles east of Midtown Toronto. And so that was an interesting, challenging time. There was no building. They had a parsonage. We worshipped in, of all places, the Odd Fellows Hall, which had its occasional rough spots. It was a good place to serve at the beginning of my ministry because my parents were only about 2 hours away on the other side of Toronto. And so my wife got to know my parents that way. We had just gotten married at the beginning of my ministry. And then after that, I took a call to New Orleans, Louisiana, and served there at Salem Lutheran Church in Gretna. church, school, multiple staff parish. Again, a lovely, challenging time. I love the people there. They were very welcoming and warm, and they wanted you to be part of their family. And so that we were at family events continually. Great fishing there, not just for soles, but also for sea trout. That was fantastic. So a great life there. And then in 1996, I had the call to Memorial here in Houston. And it's a much different ministry than in New Orleans. New Orleans was sort of slow and partying, you know. not always good. But in Houston, of course, very aggressive people. They want to get things done, very faithful. So fun to work with. Different style entirely here in Houston. Highly educated doctors, lawyers, middle-level executives, oil people. You know, that's kind of the community that I got to work with. And a great school here, fabulous classical school, and wonderful staff always here.
What did you learn about yourself and what it means to be a pastor throughout your time in three different places? It sounded like they offered their own joys and challenges. What did you learn over those years of what it means to be a pastor, to care for people's souls?
Yeah, I mean, I learned to suffer and I learned humility. There were times where I had to, well, be humble in the presence of God's people, even in cases where I knew I was right. Of course, I didn't give up anything theologically. That wasn't the point. But there were times where, you know, for the benefit of all involved, a great deal of humility was required. So, I mean, it's the hammer of God, right? He puts you in that crucible and gets the pestle and starts whacking away on you. And it's funny, now I'm retired and I finally think I might have been a decent pastor for the last year or two, you know, because you weren't so hard on me. And maybe I learned a couple of things I don't know. It's, you know, it is amazing. When you leave seminary, you think you know everything. And a couple of years in, you realize you know absolutely nothing. And that is a great thing to learn. So anyway, that's been my experience.
When you come to that realization that you know absolutely nothing, you think you knew everything, and now you realize you know nothing, how does that change how you approach how you serve?
Well, I mean, you have to stay focused in and under the cross of Christ with its apparent weakness and yet glory and strength. And so, you know, you just have to receive what God gives. Just as an example, this is some years ago, I had a dear member who passed away of Hodgkin's lymphoma, but he went in and out of the hospital quite a number of times during his decline. And I would show up to bring the Holy Sacrament and do devotions with him. And I'd get 2 minutes into the devotion, and all of a sudden, Tim was saying, yeah, and this pastor, and so on and so forth. And I finally just had to stop. I said, look, you don't know the drill, Tim. I'm here to do devotions for you. You're not there to do devotions for me. So, I mean, again, you have to accept this as a wonderful gift from the Lord. That in some cases, your people are going to minister to you as you bring them the gospel. So there's a wonderful mutuality, a koinonia about it, that God brings you to that continually.
We are in our Getting to Know the Council of Presidents series with Reverend Dr. Scott Murray, third vice president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are talking with the Reverend Dr. Scott Murray. He's third vice president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, representing the West Southwest region in our Getting to Know the Council of Presidents series. So we've established some of his favorite things, path to seminary formation and his service as a pastor in the parish. Now let's talk about your duties as third vice president. What are your responsibilities as third vice president?
Well, of course, to support President Harrison. I was elected in 2010 at the same time that President Harrison was elected at the Houston Convention. And so for 16 years, I've been trying to hold up the arms of the prophet. So when he needs help, sometimes he needs advice, sometimes he asks for it, sometimes he doesn't, and yet we're there to advise. One of the things, of course, that the vice presidents do is they will stand in for him. Say, for example, if there's an event that he cannot get to, we will go, like a funeral for perhaps a past president of synod, or if there are judicatory issues that require the involvement of the president of synod and he can't be there, we go, we do the visitations on the districts, often together with either the first vice president or President Harrison or both, depending on where they are and when. So there's all kinds of things like that. Of course, we're on Council of Presidents. We're sort of, I don't know, neither fish nor fowl, right? The district presidents look at us sort of askance because we don't have the supervisory roles that they do. Our viewpoint is somewhat different. I enjoyed bringing the perspective to the COP of an active parish pastor, because I could talk about, for example, probably one of the most diverse congregations in the Missouri Synod. I don't like to think about people in terms of ethnicity, and yet probably somewhere in the range of 20 to 25% of our parish was non-American born. So Africans, East Indians, Vietnamese, Chinese, and the list goes on. So it was fun to bring that perspective to the Council of Presidents as well. So there's lots more duties, I suppose, but that'll suffice.
Now you represent the West Southwest region. So tell us about what that means, what that region is, and that significance of regional representation on the Council of Presidents.
Right. So my region goes from Beaumont, Texas, to San Diego, California, to the border of Canada, including the Rocky Mountain District, which is Colorado, New Mexico, and so on. It also includes Alaska and Hawaii. I've been asking for a visitation in Hawaii for some years and to no effect. My region is basically a third of the landmass of the United States,
yeah,
with only one-fifth of the census of the Missouri Synod. In fact, it's less than one-fifth of the census of the Missouri Synod. So, I mean, the travel can be a bit challenging, but I'm actually well-placed geographically to do the travel because Houston enables me to get to Southern California. I can get to Seattle and Portland. I can, get to San Francisco with one flight. So there's not even a change of planes. Same with St. Louis. So it really has been strategically a pretty good spot, despite the fact that I'm way over on the east side of the region. Regionally, of course, the nominations come from the region, but the election occurs in synod in convention. So all members of the delegation vote for the regional vice presidents. The goal is to represent your region. Of course, our region is very diverse and huge, so that can be challenging from time to time. But, again, Houston is part of that region. And while it's different than San Diego, it does have very similar, even if different, challenges in parish ministry and in the church's life. So you try to bring that perspective to the council.
We have just about 5 minutes left. This next question might take a half an hour or more, but we'll see where we could go in 5 minutes. Why are you a pastor in the LCMS today?
Because we have the truth. Next question, please. No, I'm really I'm serious about that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be a Missouri Synod pastor if I thought that some other church body had the truth. I would be there. I feel like the confessors of the of our Book of Concord. With intrepid hearts, we've committed ourselves even to death on this, and we will stand before our Heavenly Father and make this same confession before His judgment seat. And this is, I feel precisely this way. And this is the way I was taught at the seminary. I was catechized faithfully by a faithful Missouri Synod pastor who was a very good preacher. And I'm, you know, this side of the grave, I'm going to confess this to the nth. That's all there is.
Absolutely. What have you learned about the LCMS having such a large region to cover, for one thing, but being a pastor for a long time in different areas of the country, serving different people, being on the Council of Presidents for quite a while? What have you learned about the people that make up the Missouri Synod?
Well, they're incredibly talented. I'm talking to two of them right now, right? So, but this is what I've experienced. I mean, you know, our clergy are really well educated. You know, they beat Greek into us. They beat Latin, Hebrew, you know, all that stuff. You get out of seminary and you think, boy, you're a pretty smart guy. And then you run into some of these faithful lay people that are running major corporations or doing brain surgery or, you know, all kinds of, you know, running a law firm and that kind of thing. And then you're amazed at how faithful they want to be. When I came to Memorial, I thought I might be a short-timer because I followed a man who was here almost 40. And I figured, well, if I survive 5 years, that'll be great. Well, at my five-year anniversary, I went to one of the members and said, I'm surprised I'm still here. And he said, look, Pastor, our people, when they need tax advice, pay the most expensive tax lawyer they can find so they get the best tax advice. When it came to calling a pastor, we chose the person we thought would be the best theologian. And we want you to be here as long as the previous pastor. I said, well, I'm a bit old in the first place, so I don't think that's ever going to happen. But I made 28 years. So it's the talent of our lay people that has been impressive to me in the years of ministry that the Lord's given me.
Hmm. Speaking of years of ministry, I want to revisit some of the items from the lightning round. Now, the first one in the lightning round, when we asked your favorite color, you said blue because it's the color of your bride's eyes.
Yeah.
How has your bride been a key part of your ministry throughout these years, serving as a parish pastor, as a vice president? How has she been a support to you and a key part of the ways that you've served?
Yeah. So my wife is my helpmeet. There's a place in the form that we fill out, the self-evaluation tool, that goes to parishes. And one of the items there, and it's been a long time since I filled this out, but one of the items is, how is she involved in your ministry? And I kept it very short. I just said, she's the helpmeet. And so my wife is a professional. She's a drug researcher. She's retired as well. So she had something she was doing, but she was always on my side. She always encouraged, but she stayed out of parish politics, absolutely. Mm. And wives can be deeply hurt by the hard-fisted politics that can arise in any parish. I don't care what it is. And she was able to stay out of that. And so, you know, she was my supporter at home. And so she has been a joy to me. We're going to be married 43 years in October. And, you know, it's just been a marriage made in heaven, no doubt.
Those are wise words for ministry families. And I also want to ask about your mom. We're on a theme of women right now.
Yeah.
This is excellent. You mentioned your mom's Black Forest tart. And at the beginning, you mentioned how your parents cared for you so well. What was it about that formation that really put you on a path to where you are now?
Well, just sort of brutally, I was required to learn the catechism as a child. And so Saturday night, catechism was Sunday during Sunday school, which is a bit odd. But that's the way they did it there in Ontario. So Saturday night is hockey night in Canada.
Yes.
Now, what Canadian kid doesn't want to watch hockey night in Canada? So the deal was, before hockey night in Canada started, you had to repeat the catechism from memory, and then you could watch the hockey game. Well, needless to say, I learned the catechism, you know. So it was a good discipline. My parents were very insistent that these things had to be learned and had to be memorized. And of course, they took us to church. They went to church with us. You know, they matured as Christians as we got older. They were not Bible study goers earlier on. But by the time I suppose I was in college, they were going regularly to Bible class and those kinds of things. So they really set a very good example.
Okay, Sarah brought up the food and we're all out of time, but I really want to know what goes into a Black Forest tort.
So it's a fairly dense chocolate cake, three layers. It tends to be not very sweet. It's heavy chocolatey. And then there is whipped cream icing where kirsch is in the icing or in the whipped cream. And then you have Bing cherries that you soak in kirsch. And that goes between the layers. So there's two layers of cherries with kirsch. And
what's kirsch?
It's a cherry liqueur. It's a German cherry liqueur.
Of course.
It doesn't taste very cherry. It's very fiery, right? And then, you know, you layer it. And then the whipped cream with the kirsch in it is used to ice the cake. And then you would shave like 70% cacao chocolate, shredding it onto the top of the cake. And wow, I'm telling you, that is the very bread that comes down from heaven.
That sounds amazing.
It is. And my wife has learned to make it too. So, you know, we were talking about birthday cakes earlier last week, and I said, well, how about a Black Forest tort for my birthday, dear?
Very
so
nice.
We'll see.
That sounds really good right about now.
Yes, it does.
There you have it. All the important things, including Black Forest tort.
Yep.
The Reverend Dr. Scott Murray, third vice president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, representing the West Southwest region. Dr. Murray, thanks so much for joining us on this special series on the Coffee Hour.
It's always a joy to chat with you, Sarah and Andy. Have a great one.
You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Go make a chocolate tort. That sounds amazing.
I'm gonna go watch hockey.
No kidding, eh?
Yeah.
The Coffee Hour is a production of KFUO. This program and our station are dependent on listeners just like you. To support KFUO Radio, our podcast, and all the other programming, please make your gift or pledge today at kfuo.org/give and help us continue sharing the good news of Christ for you anytime, anywhere. KFUO.org/give.